nivel tanto que pues que querrás otros 3 meses y otros 3. Entra en grupobauan.com e infórmate. Curso trimestral de Bauan. Si tienes alguna duda o necesitas información sobre cualquiera de nuestros cursos, llámanos al 91-133-5833. Repito, 91-133-5833.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Western Civilization. From Mesopotamia to Silicon Valley. I'm your host, my name is Guy Williams, and on this program I'm going to talk about the bad old days in the last days of the House of Austria, right? Before the transition from the Habsburgs to the Bourbons, before the War of Spanish Succession. On my last program, I talked about the early days of the reign of Carlos II, El Hechizado, right? Charles II, the Bewitched. And how, at that time, there was a certain concentration of events, irrationalism, so that you had more and more concentration on exorcisms and this idea of demonic possession and demonic influence was becoming increasingly popular, not just in Spain, but all over Europe. But in this case, it had a very strong effect on the court. And as I mentioned earlier, the court was the center of attention, right? Gossip within the palace. Is the king okay or is he not okay? And everybody wanted to know whether he was capable of producing an heir. And in the end, he was not. Everyone wanted to know what would happen afterwards, so that you had the pretender from the Habsburgs, the Austrian, and you had the pretender from the Bourbons, who initially concentrated on Bavaria. And there was supposed to be a Bavarian that was going to be put on the throne. He had already made a deal with France. He was going to divide Spain, give the north of Spain to France, and that would that would solve his problem. France would allow him to take over the rest of Spain. And they would cut a deal. But of course, the Bavarian pretender died very young. And so everything went back to square one. In the end, it was Philippe d'Anjou who came into Spain as Felipe V. Initially welcomed. It was only later that the Habsburgs decided to make things difficult for him, to cause problems. Now, on my last program, I was talking about Carlos II. I was talking about El Hechizado and his first wife, Maria Luisa de Orleans, and how she, as the niece of the King of France, and very beautiful and very lively and with a mind of her own, independent, how she had done her duty. She had done the best she could in order to try to produce an heir. But, well, in the end, she died. And I have read the story of the accident. She was riding on a horse, and the horse, se arrodilló, he did one of his tricks and began to kneel unexpectedly, and she hit her side against the silla de montar, against the saddle, and this caused internal injuries. However, when she died, most of the court came to the conclusion that she had been poisoned in Benenada. This was certainly what they were talking about in France. Now, at the time, the king was getting older prematurely, right? This degeneration included a very fast aging process. And so, you know, as soon as possible, this was urgent. They wanted to get him a wife, and they chose the wife the way you might choose a cow, the bloodline. They were extremely fecund. They were extremely fertile, right? Her mother had, 23 children? All of them healthy? She was perhaps the most fertile woman among the nobility in Europe. This is Mariana de Neuburgo. And Mariana arrived. She was not pretty. And Carlos hated that. After having his first wife was beautiful, and everybody said she was beautiful. Well, the second one was not. Naturally, he had received portraits of her before the wedding. And if the portraits were idealized. Now, she had received portraits of him that were idealized, right? When they actually saw each other in the flesh, right? In person. It was a big disappointment to both of them. But they tried. And yes, the one person she hated in court was her mother-in-law, who was also German. They used to have enormous fights and insult each other in German. The mother was Mariana de Austria, and this was the daughter-in-law, la nuera was Mariana de Neuburgo, and so this was called la guerra de las dos Marianas. They used to fight all the time. And because they were fighting in German, if nobody who didn't speak German was able to record what they said to each other, unfortunately. In any case, she knew that she was never going to get pregnant, but with the help of her doctor, she was able to fingir, that she was pregnant. She went through 12 false pregnancies and false miscarriages in order to keep the hopes of the court up, right? In order not to lose her reason for being in the court in the first place. And on my last program, I began to talk about the spy that the French crown had placed in the court and was communicating regularly, giving information to King Louis in France. This was La Marquise de Gudin, and she corresponded with the French king on a regular basis, telling him what he wanted to hear, making it sound very, very dark and bad in Spain. I quote one of her letters, the misery, right, the destitution, the desolation is horrible in Aragon, Navarra, and Vizcaya. There, you find a lack of everything. Falta de todo, right? Falta todo ahí. Men and money. There is no commerce. There are no resources. In the kingdoms of Valencia, Castile, and Andalusia, things are not much better. Yes. Oh, she writes, this winter has been so harsh, right? Agreste. This winter has been so harsh that most of the animals have died in misery. There is no bread, there is no meat, there is no fish of any kind. Since Madrid is Madrid, no one has seen anything like this. One would think that Madrid is a city bajo asedio, no asediada, a city under siege, a besieged city. There is no money, nor anything to buy. And what little you find, you can only purchase for gold. People walk through the streets and complain loudly. So, this is what she's saying about the situation, and obviously, she knows what to tell her boss, but perhaps this is a reflection, an accurate reflection, of the reality in Madrid at the time. Then she says, seeing the king in the situation he is now, everyone is convinced that this is because he has been bewitched, right? Hechizado. A spell, un hechizo. A spell has been put on him, which is actually probable. It's fácil y corriente. It happens all the time here because ever since the conquest of the Indies, right? Ever since the conquest of the New World, the America, because the Indians there used witchcraft, maleficos, which the devil had taught them. Well, those Indians taught the same maleficos, the same spells, to the Spaniards, who in turn came back to Spain. Every port in Andalusia is filled with slaves that know the power of herbs. El poder de las hierbas is what she says. Medicinal plants of all kinds. As far as the king is concerned, they force him to do whatever they want. His spirit and his body are equally weak. His face is so pale, so pallid, that he looks more dead than alive. So situation is very, very serious in court. And outside of court, what are people saying about this? Because she is privileged, she sees what's going on. But what about the people? Now, in another letter, she says, since the time of Lent, Quaresma, since the time of Lent, the preachers are everywhere explaining that the king will be condemned with no mercy for his injustice and for his bad governing. They say that his confessor is not a Christian, but rather a Jew, a Muslim, or something worse. And these same preachers say that we should not be surprised to see that everything he tries is fails, right? That all of his projects are destroyed because the hand of God always comes down hard on the impious. Now, the person they're talking about is naturally the king, but the person that the Queen brought in as her number one confidant, a somebody from Tirolia, from southern Austria or northern Italy, from that area, a Jesuit called Juan Everard Nitard. And Nitard, again, intransigent, rigid, cabeza cuadrada, very, very, very much like the Queen herself. And Nitard, who I have read never learned how to speak Spanish properly, was made Inquisitor General. And everything Nitard believed was done. Right? He gave the order and people had to obey whether they wanted to or not. And so, the French spy is saying that, this man, well, preachers all over Spain, predicadores, preachers all over Spain from the pulpit are denouncing this man, that the head of, religion in Spain, as, being against doing the devil's work, working against God. In addition to which, on the street, you know, they were talking about all kinds of things. One of the popular sayings at the time: Tres vírgenes hay en Madrid, la Almudena, la de Atocha, y la Reina Nuestra Señora. In other words, that that Mariana was in no way was going to get pregnant, right? Her mother had had, what, 23 children, but she, no. Tres vírgenes hay en Madrid. La librería del cardenal, la espada del duque de Medina Sidonia, y la reina Nuestra Señora. This is the kind of people, this is the kind of thing people were saying on the street. Now, in 1696, Mariana died of breast cancer that she had kept hidden. That, because she, you know, I guess because of her sense of modesty or something like that. She didn't want to be impudica. In any case, she kept it to herself till the last minute. And after that, it was all over. But during this time, when they still thought that, there was a chance. Well, in that case, there were all sorts of things that were done. They talk about, for example, cadavers. Now, this is a fact. When he was younger, when he was still married to his first wife, he was always mentioning the guilt that he felt, the culpabilidad, the guilt that he felt, because he had been there while his father was agonizing. So, he wanted to apologize to his father, and so he took his young wife to the Escorial and ordered them to open up the Pantheon and, expose the cadaver of his father. And there he hugged, right, abrazó, he hugged the cadaver of his father. And so, naturally after this, his wife was curada de espanto, right? She was, she was able to, nothing surprised her. Nothing surprised her after that moment. And as the court was increasingly desperate, again, they started talking to exorcists, renowned exorcists, because naturally they wanted to do this in the right way. They wanted expert advice, but some of the advice they got was, for example, necromancy, that the king should throw himself on the cadaver of a dead woman in a church, in the altar. At least, these are what they say happened. I wasn't there, but these are the rumors. What is true is that there was a correspondence. For example, they asked a Dominican friar, Antonio Álvarez de Argüelles, who was in Cangas de Narcea and had three women, three nuns who were demonically possessed by Satan. And he was requested to ask these nuns to talk to Satan and to interrogate Satan as to the nature of the problem, of the el hechizo, right? Of the spell that the king was under. So yes, these three nuns, evidently informed by Satan of what was going on, said that it had been precisely the Queen Mother, Mariana de Austria, the person who had put him under a spell by giving her son, at the age 14, a chocolate that had been mixed with the brains of someone who was condemned for a capital crime. So that the brains of an executed dead man. Everybody knew at the time that the king could not chew, right? Because of his jaw. His jaw was so deformed at that time. This is something that was common among the Los Borgogna, the kings of Burgundy, and then later on through Carlos V, the Habsburgs increasingly had this problem with their jaw. They could not shut their mouths, right? At prognatism, where the lower jaw hangs out. This was so magnified under Carlos II that he was not able to masticar. He was not able to chew his food. And so, in order to give him the protein, everybody knew at the time that when he was young, he had been fed on a combination of hot chocolate and sesos, brains. But of course, this would have been sesos de cordero, algo así, which at the time would have been considered normal. But no, in this case, these the nuns are saying that the brains that he ingested when he was young were actually those of condemned and people that had been condemned and executed, human brains. Another one of the possessed nuns said that the cure, the way to get him out of this would be to for him to drink every morning, to drink oil. So holy oil, right? Oil that had been sanctified, that had been blessed, and boil the oil. He would drink it in the morning, and if it contained the powder from a relic, then that would be much more effective. In other words, this is the kind of people, this is the kind of thing that people were obsessing about at the time. Foreign policy, diplomatic relations, geopolitical thing. All of these were practically forgotten. At the time, at least in the palace, things were... Spain didn't suffer as much as it could have in this, let's say, power vacuum. But, again, things could have been much, much worse. One of the people who did step up, one of the people who was there was Juan José de Austria. His half-brother. But, okay, we're going to have to talk about that on the second part of the program.
Profesionales de su empresa no comunican eficazmente en inglés, su empresa no necesita clases de inglés. Su empresa necesita una solución y la necesita urgentemente. Muchas son las empresas españolas que despilfarran el dinero contratando clases de inglés a diestro y siniestro. Café para todos y resultados para nadie. Dominar el inglés requiere enfoque, esfuerzo y un plan. En Baugen Empresas tenemos un plan hecho a medida para su empresa. No nos interesa vender clases, nos interesa conseguir soluciones. Y para ello tenemos un apasionado equipo de profesores formados meticulosamente en el método Baugen. Llama al 911335831, 911335831. Su empresa necesita una solución y la necesita urgentemente.
Hey, have you heard about our trimestrales? No? Well, let me tell you all about them. The program lasts 3 months. Eso es, dura tres meses. Many different timetables to choose from. From Monday to Friday, Saturdays in the morning. And you'll have plenty of homework. And your teacher will correct your homework and check it to make sure you're making progress. Find out more now. Our trimestrales at Vaughan. Small groups, only 4 to 6 students per class. And the class is focused on speaking and using the language. Contact us and find out about trimestrales with one of our dynamic Vaughan teachers. You won't regret it. No te arrepentirás. More information at GrupoVaughan.com.
Sin prisa, pero sin pausa. This is the Spanish expression that I use when people ask me what they should do with their children concerning English. Sin prisa pero sin pausa. The target date for English mastery is age 23. Children and adolescents don't need English, really, until they reach adulthood, until they finish their studies and start looking for their first job. This is usually at the age of 23. If they don't know English well at this point, they are in trouble. They have a problem, an important problem. If they don't know English well at the age of 23, when they enter the labor market, they will probably never reach a decent level, a good working level of English. So, as a mother or father, you need to make sure that your children gain a good command of English by the age of 23 at the latest. This means that when the child is born, you have 23 years to solve the problem. Are you capable of solving a problem if you have a 23-year window to solve it? I hope so. Here in Vaughan Systems, we provide kids, children, with dynamic verbal access to English starting at the age of 4. We expose the children to the native sound of the language, and we work especially hard to promote effective listening comprehension and to make the language fun and attractive for the children. Entrust your children to us, little by little, slowly but surely, sin prisa pero sin pausa. We will transform them into bilingual adolescents and prepare them for age 23. Contact Vaughan Jr.
Más información sobre la línea Junior de Vaughan Systems en el teléfono 91-133-5832. 91-133-5832.
Si tienes alguna duda o necesitas información sobre cualquiera de nuestros cursos, llámanos al 91-133-5833. Repito, 91-133-5833.
El Máster en Inglés Profesional te ofrece este programa.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Western Civilization. From Mesopotamia to Silicon Valley. I'm your host, my name is Guy Williams, and on the first part of the program, I was talking about the times of Carlos II, El Hechizado, and how, his first marriage and his second marriage, things just went from bad to worse, and they were doing the most extravagant things to try to cure him. This was at a time when things like exorcisms were taken very, very seriously. Nobody doubted that the king had been bewitched, Hechizado. And so it was just a question of who had done it and why. Now, logically, if this is a plot, un complot, no? By Satan, it's going to be necessary to get the information from Satan himself. And the person who has direct access to Satan is an exorcist. The exorcist, through the demonically possessed, can ask questions of Satan and perhaps compel Satan to give the correct answer, or at least this is what people believed at the time. And this was done. One of the responses that they got from Cangas de Narcea, there were three local nuns who were possessed by Satan, and the person in charge, the Dominican friar in charge, Antonio Alvarez de Argüelles, who was widely reputed, who had a lot of fame as an exorcist, as master of his profession. Well, the information that they gave him was that it had been the Queen Mother herself who had put the spell on her son. By the way, remember that the English for hechizo is spell. That's the word we use. And it is not a coincidence, not at all a coincidence, that ortografía and hechizo are the same word in English. Remember that since the beginning of the written word, it was considered absolutely universally accepted that if you knew the correct name of something, then you would have power over this thing. So that the early gods and goddesses, especially Isis in Egypt, she knew the real name of everything. Everything had an official name and a real name. Every person had an official name and a real name. If you know the real name, then you have power over that thing. And if you write the real name, then whatever you want to happen will happen. In other words, if you can deletrear, if you can spell, then this will cause a spell to happen. In any case, none of it worked. None of it worked. The king died. And when he died, The autopsy, they said, the
médico forense, right? The examining doctor wrote that there was not in his body even a drop of blood. Are we supposed to believe this? There was not in his body even a drop of blood. His heart was the size of a peppercorn. Un grano de pimienta. Right? No tenía el cadáver ni una gota de sangre. El corazón apareció del tamaño de un grano de pimienta. Los pulmones corroídos, los intestinos putrefactos y gangrenados. So, his intestines were gangrenous and rotten, and his lungs were ruined. Tenía un solo testículo negro como el carbón, one testicle, black as coal, and, y la cabeza llena de agua, and his head was filled with water, hydrocephalia, right? Water on the brain. So you can imagine the relief when Philip Quinto, when Philip of Anjou became the king. He had to sign saying that he would renounce his rights to the French throne. They did not want that kind of union. As I mentioned earlier, the French ambassador said the Pyrenees, there are no longer any Pyrenees. The Pyrenees don't exist anymore. In other words, that France and Spain are the same now. And yet, it never worked out that way. And especially after the war, the Habsburgs, the Austrias, decided to make things different, or rather very, very difficult for this transition to power. And things, well, they quickly got complicated. Castile was very loyal, ferociously loyal, to the new dynasty throughout the War of Spanish Succession. However, when Philip began to attack Catalonia, that was a different thing. In 1705, Archduke Charles, the Austrian pretender, landed in Catalonia and took Barcelona. They were willing to go along with this because he promised the maintenance of their privileges and institutions. Everybody understood that when the Bourbons came to Madrid, they were going to centralize things. And the difference, the jurisdictional difference, the institutional difference between Castile and the crown of Aragon would be eliminated. Unless, of course, there was loyalty. For example, the Basques and, in Navarre, they were immediately loyal to the newcomers, to the Bourbons, and they were allowed to keep their traditions and their institutions. However, Aragon was not. Aragon, in the name of their fueros, revolted against the Castilian troops, going through Aragon to reach Catalonia and crush the revolt. Now, this aristocratic, treason was punished, brutally punished, after the war. One of the people, Macanaz, right? Melchor de Macanaz, a lawyer administrator working closely with the French. He was the one who initially did this, but the person responsible for the liquidation of the differences, the liquidation of the Generalitat, for example, was José Patiño. José Patiño Rosales, who had actually been born in Milan, and so was sort of a Italian-Spanish. He had been in charge of the armies, first in Extremadura and then in Catalonia. And once there, he became the president of the Junta Superior, right, the higher council, the Gobierno y Justicia de Catalunya, with all of the reforms involved, with the abolition of traditional laws and institutions and self-government there. So this old idea that Catalunya and Aragon itself, the three kingdoms, well, actually four kingdoms, the Balearic Islands, Valencia, Aragon, and Catalunya, that they would all be run along similar lines to Castile. All of that was undertaken by Patiño. He's the one who introduced the catastro, the tax reform, and an equalization of responsibilities, of rights and duties. He was enormously successful, and believe it or not, this was enormously popular. Today, people in Catalonia look back on this time as a horrific moment in the history definitely marking a before and after. But for them, it was the beginning of a time of tyranny. Whereas, if you look back, these reforms were actually popular among large segments of the population, in part because finally people from Catalonia and the Aragon itself, they were going to be allowed to participate in the larger empire. They were going to be allowed to do business with America. Patiño was so successful at this that he later became the Intendant General of the Navy and President of the Contratación, no? Tribunal de Contratación de Indias, right? The centralized organization through which all trade and every aspect of whatever went to the Indias, whatever went to America and came from America, all of that concentrated in Sevilla, in Seville, and all of that centralized. Well, he, as head of this institution, was responsible for its decentralization. He moved the Casa de Contratación from Seville to Cádiz, and all of a sudden Cádiz became a different kind of city. Cádiz became part of the Americas. If you go to Cádiz today, you will see that it looks a lot like La Habana, right, in Cuba. It looks like Havana, Cuba. In many, many, many movies that are ambientadas, that are set in Havana, are actually filmed in Cádiz. And because the two cities are very, very similar. So yes, Cádiz, an American-style city, Caribbean-style city. Cádiz, old Cádiz, had been pretty much destroyed by the pirates in the early days, especially English pirates. They had attacked and destroyed a lot of the old city. And so it was being built at this time. Some of the people building it had also been responsible for the urban planning and construction of cities in the Americas. And so, yes, Cádiz is absolutely unlike any other place in Spain, but it is absolutely similar to old cities of the Spanish Empire in the Caribbean. One of the amazing things about Cádiz is that during this time, you had commerce, international commerce, so that previous to this, Sevilla had been the most cosmopolitan city in Spain, one of the most cosmopolitan cities in all of Europe, so that there were foreigners everywhere, bankers and people, religious people. The Spanish Empire was very much a multinational undertaking, so that people from all over the empire were busy there and in the New World. Well, all of that was moved to Cádiz, and there were people from everywhere in Cádiz. And these enormous, again, transcontinental commerce grew up there. One of the most interesting things that you see when you go to Cádiz today are towers. They have watchtowers, not atalayas, but they call them torres miradoras. And these look out over the sea. From them, you can see the horizon. And people were put there to watch the horizon. And when ships came, they didn't come in groups. They didn't come in convoys the way they had previously. They began to come individually. And when ships came, these towers would become signal towers so that they were able to communicate with the ships. The ships would say what they were bringing, what the cargo was. And these towers, owned by different families, were able to respond. Different families or different trading houses. They responded, and there would be pujas, no? Una subasta. So, una puja, a bid. There would be an auction, a bidding war, and an adjudication, and finally, by the time the ship arrived in port, the cargo had already been sold. This is one of the most amazing things, and as far as I know, unique in Europe. And you go to Cádiz today, and you see the 60-something remaining towers, the different styles, right? Garita with like a little soldier pillbox on top, or terraza, azotea with many different styles of watchtower, but many of them still there after all these centuries. And as I say, nothing anywhere like it. Cádiz becoming the place of the Enlightenment, so that things that we normally associate with liberalism in Spain, which would have been coffee houses where you find out about international shipping news. This is happening in Paris, happening in London, happening in Rome, but in Cádiz. And for all of this, we have José Patiño to thank. He was, as I say, Italian, but his, let's call it, his attention was firmly fixed on the Americas, because as soon as the Bourbons came into power, there was a sort of fight in the very highest levels as to what should the what should be the center of attention in terms of international relations, whether Spain should concentrate on its overseas empire or whether it should concentrate on Italy, because it had lost its possessions in Italy as a result of the Treaty of Utrecht, as a result of the War of Spanish Secession. And more than anything, the Bourbons, not Spain itself, Spain really had very little interest in Italy anymore, but the Bourbon dynasty wanted to have an active participation in Italy. And so there was sort of a, the two tendencies are the Italian tendency, a desire for revenge and recovery, and let's call it the Atlantic tendency, which essentially was understood that the enemy, the big enemy, was going to be Britain, right? In the 17th century, you had land battles and land enemies, and the number one land enemy was France. But the 18th century, you had enemies by sea, and the sea was going to be more and more important. And the country that dominated the sea at this point was Britain. So what you have initially, again, is the two blocks. Europe is divided into two blocks. You've got the Bourbon bloc, which is France and Spain, and then you've got the Habsburg bloc, which is Austria, a large part of Germany, the Netherlands, Britain, and Portugal. And these people are successfully able to, again, impose the terms of the Treaty of Utrecht. There are several consequences of this. So France gives Louisiana to Spain, giving all of the Americas to the Spanish Empire, and helping Spain get influence, again, making it essentially, when France has to leave America, it's going to be a confrontation, a showdown between Spain and England in America. But earlier than this, you have Spain helping France in the War of Polish Succession, which Spain really, you know, it's a quid pro quo, this for that. I do something for you, you do something for me. Spain helped France gain a certain amount of, let's say, cachet, a power in Central Europe at this time. And in exchange, the Bourbons finally got what they wanted, which was to put their princes in the throne of Naples and Sicily. So this revenge and recuperation of territory, recovery of territory, is finally achieved at this time. Meanwhile, France does not get what it wants in Italy, but it does seriously debilitate, weaken the Austrians in this War of Polish Succession. And again, if you're concentrating on if you're concentrating on Italy at the expense of everything else in the world, if you're concentrating on Italy and putting a member of the Bourbon dynasty on the throne of Naples and Sicily, then it was worth it. Otherwise, in terms of geopolitical interest, for Spain, probably not. All right, I've run out of time.
Nuestro curso online es único por una sencilla razón. Nuestros profesores son los mejores del mercado. Richard Vaughan, Ximena Holiday, Kyle Miller, Alberto Alonso, Richard Brown, nuestros All Stars desde cualquier lugar. Por menos de 30 céntimos al día. Quédate en casa y aprovecha para poner en forma tu inglés. Entra en la web cursodeinglesonlinevaughan.com e infórmate. Pruébalo durante 2 semanas y si no te gusta, te devolvemos el dinero. cursodeinglesonlinevaughan.com, porque hay muchos, pero solo uno de Vaughan.
¿Quieres recibir clase conmigo? Pues si quieres.